Hello and welcome to Tax Invoice, the ATO's official podcast. Here at the ATO, we want tax and super to be as easy to understand as possible. So we've invited industry experts to sit down with ATO's senior leaders and ask them the questions. We hope you enjoy this episode of Tax Invoice.
Hi, and thanks for joining me on this episode of Tax Invoice. My name is Michael Yardney, and I'm the CEO of Metropole Property Strategists. I'm passionate about all things property. I've got my own podcast on property. I'm a regular property commentator in the media, and I've written 8 books on wealth and property. Today, I'm joined by Adam O'Grady, Assistant Commissioner for Individuals and Intermediaries at the Australian Taxation Office. Adam's got over 16 years' experience with the ATO and has spent most of that time developing opportunities to better use data and technology to improve risk management and the client experience. Welcome, Adam.
G'day, Michael. Nice to be with you today talking tax and property.
Well, I love both of those topics. So I want to address some of the concerns, some of the confusion that I've found residential rental property investors have got at the moment. There's some changes to the legislation. There's issues with COVID. There's been floods and bushfires. We've had a challenging year. So I'd like to put to you some of the things that our clients have been asking us, that people have been leaving on my podcast and my blog. And I guess the aim is to get some more clarity around some of these changes introduced by the tax department to help people keep more money in their pocket by avoiding the costly mistakes when completing your tax returns. I guess that's right down your alley, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly right, Michael. Really, my job, as I see it very simply, is helping people to get their tax right. And it's much easier, cheaper for them if they can do that up front, rather than down the track if we have to come and ask them to explain what they've done and all those sort of things. And really for me, tax is almost falls into place if you're a savvy investor and you're really thinking about your investments and closely monitoring and manage your investments properly, then the tax side can flow very easily from that good work up front.
Well, it should if you get things right. But at the moment, people are having trouble with COVID. So can we first discuss some of the COVID issues? One of the common ones is my tenant's not paying me the full rent, or they've stopped paying the rent for a while because they've been affected by COVID. But what about the claims? Can I still claim my rental expenses, Adam? Can I claim my deductions and interest?
Yeah, Michael, that's a good one. And it has been a common question we have been getting from landlords over the last few months. The short answer is yes. So where you've got a tenant that due to circumstances they're unable to pay their rent, so they've stopped paying, or maybe even as a landlord you've given them a bit of a rent holiday, so to speak, for a period of time, where it's that arm's length, so it's not someone in your family or something like that, it's a normal commercial arrangement, you can continue to claim all those deductions, so your bank interest on the loan for the property, your rates, all those sort of things, continue to deduct them as normal.
Now, some people are having rental holidays. In other words, they're only having to pay some rent back in a couple of months' time. How do I treat that then? What happens? So I haven't got rent this month, but they give me a little bit more in a couple of months' time.
Yeah, look, for individual landlords, it's relatively straightforward. You just report the income that you've received at the time. So if your tenants haven't paid for the last couple of months and then all of a sudden in August they give you 3 months' worth of rent as a bit of a back payment, you just report that income for that particular month.
Now, the banks have been helping property investors by saying, okay, you don't have to pay the interest. Now, you're going to have to pay it eventually. What happens with that? What do I deduct? Because the interest clock is still ticking. I just don't have to pay the payments at the moment, Adam.
Yeah, that's right. And with your mortgage, again, it's about the actual expenses of the loan. So whether you're paying that amount back or not, you are still accruing interest on those loans. So you're still incurring that expense. So your interest that you're able to claim continues as the bank charges it for you on that loan. So your statement and things from the bank will still outline that interest charge each month, and you'll continue to claim that as normal.
Adam, a lot of property investors have holiday homes down the coast that they rent part-time or sometimes full-time, or they've got properties on Airbnb. But at the moment, with less tourism and less interstate travel, they're finding their properties are vacant. So what happens if I decide, hey, now I'll go use it myself. I can't get rental income anyway. So maybe I'll go down the coast, or maybe I'll go into town and stay in my, what was an Airbnb property. What are the tax implications with my outgoings with that?
Yeah, Michael, it's really important that when you use your property privately, even if it's in a period where you can't rent it, that becomes a private expense. So all your deductions for the property are no longer claimable. what you need to do as an investor is actually keep records of when you are using the property yourself, or even if you're lending it out to family and friends for either no rent or really low rent, then you need to take those expenses off your return for that period.
Now, unfortunately, there's a surge in rental properties on the market. As we said, there's fewer tourists for the short-term rental market. There's fewer international students coming. And currently, people are just a bit more nervous about moving anyway. So a lot of people are going to have longer vacancies or going to have to drop their rent. Does that affect what I can claim at the other side of my expenses? Because I still have to pay my expenses, Adam.
That's right, Michael. And obviously, as the market changes, as an investor, you need to change your strategies to suit the market. So when you've got a property and you're looking to lease out the property, those expenses are claimable, providing you're actually taking efforts to try and get tenants into the property. So whether that's advertising through a real estate agent or online, those sort of things. And the property's got to be actually available for rent. So it's actually got to be in a fit state so that someone can actually move in and take effective possession of the property straight away.
Now, a lot of people understand that there's no capital gains tax payable when you sell your home, as opposed to selling an investment property. But there's been some recent tax changes if you're a foreign resident, Adam. These rules impact you now if you do sell your property. Can you tell us a bit about those and who they apply to?
Yeah, so there has been a recent law change. So where you're a foreign resident for tax purposes, and it's really important here, Michael, that your residency for tax purposes is different to your residency, say, under the Immigration Act or even your citizenship. So the situation that someone who owns a property in Australia will now find themselves in, so they might have lived in Australia, might have owned their home for, you know, 5 years. They've now decided to pack up the family and move overseas for work or whatever the situation is. Because they're actually moving their whole life to another country, they would cease to be a resident for tax purposes here in Australia. The law change that has occurred is it actually removes the main residence capital gains exception for those individuals who are not residents of Australia. So what would generally happen is when you own your own home, so your own home that you live in, if it's purely for your own private purposes, capital gains tax doesn't apply. So there's an exemption there that you don't have to apply capital gains tax when you sell the property. Investment properties are different. You do pay capital gains on those. But this law change actually affects anyone who's no longer a resident for tax purposes, so that exemption is removed from them. And the decision on your residency is really a matter of fact. So it actually depends on the circumstances at the time when you actually sell the property. And the exemption won't apply for the lifetime of you holding that property either.
Now, another issue that has changed recently is the tax deductibility of holding vacant land. Not many people can afford to do that because you've got no income coming in. Tenants don't like paying if you don't give them much shelter. But sometimes that happens. I'm going to do something on it in the future. I'm going to build a new investment property or a townhouse. Or maybe I had to pull down an old house for a while before I build the new one and get my development approvals. What's the situation with vacant land, Adam?
Yeah, so again, a fairly recent law change, Michael. So this took effect from 1 July 2019. And things like your holding costs of vacant land, so again, this would be your rates and your mortgage primarily on holding that vacant land where there is no substantial structure, so a house, a long way of saying that's a house on the land, you can no longer claim your deductions for that land. People that may purchase a block of land, hold it for 2 or 3 years with an intention of putting a property on there and then claiming the deductions for those periods. So that's no longer a valid scenario. Once you actually put the property on there and that property is habitable, so people can actually start renting it, that's when your deductions can start back up again. There is a couple of exceptions to that rule. So where the property or the land is held for farming and things like that, that no longer, you can continue to claim deductions there. But again, that tends to be more in the business side of things and not too many residential investors hold land for the purposes of renting it out to farmers.
So if I bought an old house, had it for 3, 4, 5 years and was then going to build 2 townhouses, for example, the duplex that more and more of us are living in at the moment, what about that period when I've pulled it down and when there's construction, am I able to claim costs during that middle period? I'm not going to sell it, but I'm going to keep it in the long term, Adam.
Yeah, so generally speaking, no, there won't be deductions available during that period. So when you stop renting out the property to do that construction work, your deductions or your holding costs cease, or deductions for those holding costs, I should say, cease. Now, those holding costs and other costs associated with pulling the property down and all those sort of things, they can all form part of your cost base going forward when you do finally sell the property and that capital gains tax comes into it there.
Now, I know one of the things you said right at the beginning is you wanted to help our listeners avoid making common mistakes. So whether they're using a tax agent to help them lodge their tax return or they're doing it themselves, let's have a talk about some of the common mistakes that I've seen people make or people ask me. So let's talk about apportioning expenses and income if you've co-owned a property. So in other words, you're doing it with your spouse or maybe it's another family member or maybe it's a friend. Some people own properties as tenants in common. Others have joint tenancies. In fact, many property investors wouldn't even know what the difference is. So how do I decide what I can deduct and what my share is?
One of the really common mistakes we see is people on a yearly basis changing their ownership percentage. And it really is a way of getting the best tax outcome is the way I would describe it. So in really simple terms, the amount of deductions you can claim and even the amount of income you report has to be based on the legal ownership of the property. So in most circumstances where it's spouses owning the property, that's a 50-50 split. And that 50-50 split remains for the life of the property or while you own that property. In other arrangements, you would normally have a written agreement of some description that actually accurately describes your ownership percentage. So whether that's a 20% 80 split or whatever that case may be. But that remains for the life of that arrangement. You can't sort of chop and change who claims what throughout that period.
Well, you can't really, because if you change it, you're changing your ownership and there'll be, I guess, capital gains tax and stamp duty implications if you did change the shareholding.
Well, that's right. The way to change it is, you sort of allude to there, is selling the property in some way and then all those other issues come into play.
Adam, another area I see causing confusion is when property investors buy a property and the difference between initial repairs and capital improvements. I've seen many people buy a property, it's a bit run down, so they go ahead and they do a renovation to make it more attractive to tenants to get more rent. So they're doing it for good, legitimate reasons, but then they think the repair can be claimed as a repair in that tax year, the year that work's been undertaken. Is that correct?
No, Michael, again, it's another misconception out there in the community. So where we purchase a property and then you decide to renovate it in some way to, and you know, again, it's normally for very good reasons. You want to increase your rental return on the property by doing some improvements there. But those expenses in doing those improvements and updating the property are not claimable immediately as a repair. They will come into whether it's a depreciation asset if you put a brand new fridge in or something like that, or even a capital works deduction if there's actually substantial changes to the home itself.
Well, let's take it a step further. What's the difference between a repair and a capital improvement? I've owned a property for a number of years. It's been rented out. I've got rent. I've claimed my deductions. But then it's getting older. So I want to improve the kitchen. It's worn out, but it's not totally unusable. Or I want to renovate the bathroom. What's the difference between a repair and a significant capital improvement?
The way I describe it, if I take the kitchen example, your tenant rings you up and says, look, one of the cupboards in the kitchen, the hinges have broken, I need to get the cupboards replaced or the hinges replaced. If as a landlord you go in and you get someone to replace the hinges in the broken cupboards and fix it up, so again, it's quite usable, that's an immediate repair and that's a deductible expense. It's really just a repair and maintenance type function. But when you look at that and you think, well, you know, the kitchen's a bit old, I wouldn't actually mind replacing the whole thing. So you rip it out completely and put a brand new kitchen through the house, then that is no longer a repair. It's actually a capital work and you claim that expense over 40 years for the property. So you depreciate the cost of the new kitchen over the property.
Okay. Now, currently there are some government grants to help us do renovations or new building. There's the government's renovations grant. Can residential property owners, investors use the grant to improve their property? And what can they then claim from that?
So the first thing I'd say is for anyone looking at the home builder scheme that the government has announced, is get in contact with your local state and revenue offices. so that you can fully understand what the eligibility requirements are. Very broadly, Michael, those grants and the structure of those grants are only available to owner-occupiers of the property. So that's your own personal home where you're going to choose to do either renovations or you're going to purchase and build a new property. They're not available to investors for your rental property. And for that reason, obviously, it doesn't come into the tax system for investors because you're not entitled to access the scheme. For those that are owner-occupiers, it's a tax-free payment.
Okay. Now, I know one of the biggest mistakes property investors make in claiming their taxes, mixing personal expenses with rental expenses. For example, you've got a property investment, you've got some access to a loan, maybe you've got a redraw facility, but I didn't want to take the money out and buy a boat, buy a new car, go on a holiday. How do you differentiate what's deductible and what isn't?
We've seen the popularity of those redraw facilities. It's quite a common feature now to have on any sort of finance product offered by the banks. The key thing is, as soon as you use any of the funds from that loan for private purposes, it changes the fundamental nature of the loan. So that means you need to start apportioning the interest that you're claiming on your rental property. So what you can't do is you've got $20,000 that you're able to redraw from your loan account. If you redraw that to purchase a brand new car, the interest, you can't just sort of start reclaiming 100% of the interest on the property. So the portion of interest that aligns to that $20,000, you need to continue to apportion that for the life of the loan. It's even another myth connected with that is people think, well, if I take the $20,000 out now and then in 6 months' time, I might be in a position to put that $20,000 back in and then the whole loan becomes deductible again. That's not the case either. So again, the repayments you put back into the loan, even if it is for part of your private repayment, it gets split evenly between the two components.
I guess that's one of the reasons you've got to keep good records. It's probably one of the good reasons to structure your loans correctly as well, but that's not in the scope of what we're talking about at the moment, because it starts to get messy when you taint personal and investment expenses in the same loan, because sometimes money goes in, money goes out, money goes in, money goes out month after month, and boy, does that then get complicated. So often it's better to have two different loans. But I see a situation where for a lot of people, their first home isn't going to be their final home. So what are the tax implications when buying a new home to live in, but then keeping your old home as a rental investment? I've actually got some equity in my old home now. I'm going to draw it out as the deposit for my new home. It all seems to be getting a little bit complicated, Adam.
It can get complicated again, depending on exactly how you structure your finances. And sometimes some independent advice can be really helpful for people when deciding how to structure up their affairs. Really, the principle here is where it's your own private residence, if you've effectively paid most of your loan off, then that none of that has been deductible. If you then take out a further loan to purchase the new property that you're then going to live in, none of that will be deductible either. And it's not a case that you can just sort of swap the loans around or take equity out of one property and put it into another. It really is based on what was the purpose of the loan at the time you took it out? Where did the funds go to? And that inherently decides what is deductible and what is not. So, yes, you can use the equity in your home, which is about to become a rental property, to secure a loan for your new residence, but it doesn't change the deductibility of the interest on the loan.
Good independent advice on structuring your loans at the beginning, because you could end up with the situation where you've got a property investment with a bit of a loan against it that's not deductible and a non-deductible home loan as well. So we've got to be careful about that. I'd like to talk about keeping tax records, because I know it's important to keep the right records to provide evidence of income and also expenses, because I guess that's what you ask for, Adam, and your department asks for when you say, please explain.
Yeah, no, exactly right, Michael. So again, I see my job is helping people get their tax right. That's really the key role here. What we do, we do audit people. We do review people's tax returns, particularly where their expenses and their income doesn't really match what we would expect for a property. What we often see is the individuals that really struggle through that process are the ones that don't have their really good record keeping set up. Now, there's lots of ways you can set up your record keeping. That can be yourself and being quite careful about every time you get a receipt in, filing that, noting what it was for and all those sort of things. Or even in some cases, a property manager will do that service for you if you're paying a property manager to manage your property. Well, there's lots of other apps and things commercially available that you can use as well. What I would say is, you know, not everyone enjoys sitting down, looking through invoices and thinking about tax all the time, but just a little bit of effort to think about how will I keep these records, how will I make sure I've got them in order so that when you do have to sit down at tax time and do your return, it's all there, it's all laid out for you. And again, you can either do it yourself or you can get a professional to actually help you there.
And as you say, there's lots of apps where you can take a snap on your smartphone instantly, keep it, store it, file it, or your property manager can pay all your expenses and give you one statement at the end of the year. There's one last question I'd like to ask you, which I know annoys a lot of property investors. They in the past were able to claim a deduction for going up to Queensland to look at their genuine investment property, not their holiday home, or they were able to go interstate or even travel locally, but now that's not a claimable expense. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right, Michael. So that's been another recent law change, and back in 2017, that law changed. So no longer can you claim the cost of travelling to, whether it's inspect your property or collecting rent or those sort of things, it's no longer a claimable expense. Again, there's some exceptions there if you're running a business of letting properties out. But again, for most individuals, that is not the situation. But we do continue to see a number of mistakes or people maybe not quite being across the law change and still trying to claim those expenses.
Now, let's clarify that. So even though I own a lot of investment properties, in your words, that's not a business that I can claim expenses on. Is that correct?
That's right. Just because you own a lot of property doesn't mean you're a business entity. That's right.
So I guess what I've learned from our chat today, Adam, is that there's a whole raft of available support information. I've had a look beforehand on your website. There's some really good information that's very clear that helps property investors understand what's going on. Also, what helps tenants, there's videos as well designed to help understand how to keep records, your tax obligations. So thank you for taking the time. Thank you for explaining that to me. I think I've got a much clearer understanding, and I hope our listeners have as well.
No, thanks, Michael, and thanks for joining me today. It's been a really interesting chat.
Now, to the listeners, thank you for listening to this episode of Tax Invoice. We hope you enjoyed the show. Subscribe to Tax Invoice so you don't miss out on any of the upcoming episodes about tax and super. They're great topics for listeners that we understand you want to hear about. Listen and subscribe on your favorite podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you download this. Or you can, of course, stream it from the tax office's website, ato.gov.au/podcast.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Connect with us on social media and tell us what you think. Download the transcript at ato.gov.au/podcasts.